Okay, good morning, everybody. Oh, my voice doesn't sound that clear either. Sorry about that. Probably a way for me to mute this thing, but I'm not sure how. Okay, that's got to be better. All right, so this is our last lecture on muscles. And that's what we're doing in lab this week, next week, week after. Then after that, we have a practicum and a lecture test. A lecture test. Something happened. It crashed. It went away. Lecture test. Test, 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 test. What color is the light? Okay. That could explain something. So let's see. You had a lecture test just last period. Okay, that's graded. It's in Blackboard. You're going to be able to look at those in lab or see me during office hours tomorrow. And you can look your grades over. And you're also looking over your practicums in lab this week. Those grades are in Blackboard as well. Okay, this will just take a second. And then I made the light turn to green. Sounds like it. Okay. Okay, so if anybody has any questions on those things, just see me during my office hours. So this is Bio 231, and it's November 5th. Yeah, October 5th. All right, so I'm showing you your Blackboard site. And don't forget all the rich opportunities here to practice labeling muscles and looking at origins and actions, origins, insertions, as well as actions, because on the internet you can play some videos of these things. All right, so here are probably just drag and drop exercises of various kinds of muscle groups as laid out in your lab manual. Okay, like here is the whole muscle system. Let's see what this one looks like. That looks like the quiz for next week, or at least part of it. All right, so tibialis anterior, let's just grab that one. Okay, tibialis anterior, so you can practice just dragging and dropping. This is going to be very similar to your quiz that you have next week. And what did we have in here? Muscles of the head and neck. Is that very similar to the quiz that you have in lab this week? Probably, oh yeah, almost exactly. Not precisely, but almost exactly, like... for instance, platysma, can I grab that? Oh, I can't bring it down right here, right? Just drag and drop, so you're all aware of how to do these drag and drop exercises. All right, also in Blackboard are links to other just hover type exercises. All right, this is Dr. Cremondo's website. He has good pictures of the models of muscles that are very similar or exactly like the ones that we have in lab. So, for instance, how do you use something like this? Okay, if you, let me expand it just a little bit. And I think you can display this bigger on your computer just by hitting Control Plus, smaller, Control Minus, just like you're changing the text size. All right, so here's a muscle that we're looking at in particular in today's lab, or an appendage, the upper appendage. So, for instance, if you just hover over a picture of the model, it's highlighted on the illustration on the left-hand side. And if you click, and I'm just going to left-click on this muscle, it tells you the name. So you can actually see if it's a muscle that's in this particular program by hovering over it. So I see, and this is kind of a posterior view of the arm, right? So I would say, well, that looks like the biceps brachii to me. And if you click on it, it's going to tell you, biceps brachii. okay, which is in the anterior arm. Or you can go over here if you're not sure. If you want to find the biceps brachii and click on it, all right, it becomes highlighted. So, of course, you don't need to get a printout of what it is over there because you have asked for that particular muscle. It shows you, and then you can find it on the model just by hovering the little hand over it to find out which one it is. So that's pretty handy. It's a pretty fast way of looking at all these muscles. All right, so I think the most important thing today that we're going to go over is to learn muscles by their body compartment and what's going to be the physiologic or the functional relationship between muscles and opposite body compartments. They're going to be antagonistic to each other. Right, so even on the practicum, there might be a pin in this muscle right here, which is the biceps brachii, and the question at the table might be, what's the antagonistic muscle to this one? And so you don't want to put biceps brachii down. You automatically want to think to an opposite body compartment, like the instead of anterior arm, posterior arm, and write that down on the practicum. So here is the muscle in the posterior arm, and you should know what that is, but if it's not really clear to you, you could just click on it and say, the triceps brachii. And the triceps brachii has multiple origins, just like the biceps, but it has three different origins instead of two separate origins for the biceps. All right, so this is good for just labeling and checking to see what kind of muscles are in maybe the opposite body compartment. What about these muscles down over here? Yeah, it's good for even a couple forearm muscles. All right, but what is maybe a little mysterious is that we've got the biceps over that is on the left-hand side of the picture and the triceps that is on the right-hand side of the picture, but you see anything else in this region right here? Okay, and that is this big muscle right there that should be kind of grabbing your attention right here, because this is a typical muscle that we have on a practicum. And a lot of times students are just going to say, oh, gee whiz, well, if this is the biceps over here, then posterior to it is going to be the triceps, right? But it's definitely misleading, because in the anterior compartment, and this is where your studies will pay off a lot, is in this body compartment, there are two muscles. There indeed is the biceps brachii, but there is another one that's not, I guess you could say it's posterior, but it's deep to the biceps brachii. That's a better way of saying it. All right, and this right here is the brachialis muscle. So the muscles that we have going across the arm are the biceps, the brachialis, and then the triceps. So the biceps and brachialis are in the same body compartment. So since you know what the action of the biceps is at the elbow right here, which is flexion of the elbow, you now know what the action of the brachialis is. Is it going to be a synergist or an antagonist if it's in the same body compartment? It's going to be a synergist. So this is also a muscle for forearm flexion. And can anybody show me forearm flexion? Probably all of you. Show me forearm flexion. Okay, good enough. Okay, forearm flexion. And as a matter of fact, we're going to see that the origin is on the humerus in this region right here, the whole distal shaft of the humerus, and the insertion is into the coronoid process of the ulna way down over here, so it only works across the elbow, and the brachialis is actually the prime mover for forearm flexion. Okay, so here's the prime mover. So what can you tell me about a prime mover? What's the definition of a prime mover? So it has a synergist, okay, but what else? What can you tell me about the job of the prime mover of a synergist pair or group of muscles that are synergist compared to all of the other muscles in that body compartment? It does most of the work, right? So that's the strongest in that group. And if you look at this biceps right here in brachialis, you can see that indeed it is a much bigger muscle in that respect. All right, so here's a handy website to look at. Okay, and I don't know, so you're just going to have to explore and spend some time in this particular website. All right, there's another important website, and I'll drag that over. right now, and that is Get Body Smart. And let's see, what can I show you about Get Body Smart? Oh, here are a number of, in Dr. Kamando's website, there are a number of organ systems as well, so he likes to break his information down into organ systems. That's really nice because that's our approach in this class as well. All right, so after muscles, I think we move on to nervous system and then sensory system. All right, so Get Body Smart does the same thing. So here was the skeletal system, muscle. So let's look at some muscles right here. So the big difference here is that these are not pictures of models that you have in lab. They're just illustrations, but they're nice because it gives you all the information that you need and some information that you don't, which you can ignore. But it also can animate these muscles in terms of moving different body parts around. Okay, so let's see. Let's look at some muscles that act on the arm. All right, so we have muscles that act on the anterior arm and muscles that act on the posterior arm. So what could you tell me about these two groups of muscles? If you're just going to take a wild guess, they're going to be antagonistic to each other, right? Okay, so let's look in particular at the pectoralis major muscle. Okay, and so this program is handy because it can be used as a virtual dissection. So here is the whole shoulder joint right here, muscles that work across the shoulder. And indeed, that does include the biceps brachii. We know the biceps brachii, we said, works across the elbow, but it also does work across the shoulder. And let's just take a look at that before we move on to pectoralis muscle. And let's get some of these other muscles out of the way, or maybe even better yet, let me go back and start there. Let me start with biceps brachii. All right, so I just clicked on it. And you can move this slider over. You can turn these labels on and off. So you can practice this as just a strict labeling exercise. And you don't really learn anything about origin and insertion or action by doing that, but that's a really good place to start. Right? Then turn the labels back on, check your answers. And then you can actually start to remove some of these muscles, like which one just disappeared? That was the deltoid muscle. And then we remove the pectoralis major muscle. Move the slider over, just another slide like that. We remove the latissimus dorsi. And then we're going to remove, I didn't see what disappeared. Way in the back. Teres major muscle. All right, and then, subscapularis. And the subscapular fossa disappeared. And maybe it's going to remove the coracobrachialis, I'm not sure. Yeah, so now we're just left with the biceps brachii. I can't rotate it around, that would be a handy feature. There's a program in Chrome that can do that pretty easily. Maybe I can show you that later today. But we can see the two ends of the muscle clearly now. The origin, right, there are two origins for the biceps. The short head goes to the coracoid process on the scapula. Maybe you can remember that from when you're studying for the practicum. Here's the acromion process way over here. And, of course, that articulates with the clavicle. And then here is the long head. So it's a little bit thinner tendon, and it goes through the intertubercular groove over the top of the shoulder joint, and it originates in a tubercle that's right above the glenoid cavity that I see right here. And if I want to make this bigger, I think all I have to do is do Control Plus. Maybe it depends a little bit on your browser. Control Plus. Oh, I just didn't hit it. There, that's a little bit easier to see probably. So here's the supraglenoid tubercle, and then down over here is going to be the infraglenoid tubercle. So the long head originates from the supraglenoid tubercle going down through the intertubercular groove, forms the muscle belly, and then inserts into the radial tuberosity and also some fascia of the forearm that surrounds the ulna right here. So it goes across both the shoulder as well as the elbow. Okay, and here is the origin. It will tell you the origin, tells you the insertion. All right, and since we're talking about motion at the shoulder for this particular muscle, right, when the biceps contracts, it's going to lift the arm, okay, up to the level of the shoulder. when that happened. So what kind of motion was that? What motion is this? It's a tricky one to remember. And the only way to really remember it is to pair it with the motion at the hip. What is this motion at the hip? The motion at the hip is easy to appreciate. What motion is that? That's flexion, because that's easy to see. Hard to see with the humerus, but it is also flexion. And then extension, right? So flexion and extension. So since the biceps actually goes across the shoulder, it does weakly flex at the shoulder. And if you want to see that motion in particular, let's see if it's what I demonstrated to you. I've got my fingers crossed. Ah, what was that? So we see flexion. And then when the muscle relaxes, then the arm just extends back down to more or less anatomic position. So do you see that as being flexion? Can you see that motion as being flexion? All right, so that's for the one of the actions of the biceps. All right, so now let's go to the pectoralis major. All right, so here we are, pectoralis major. And let's get rid of some of these other muscles. Let's dissect them away. And that leaves us just with the pectoralis. All right, so now we can see the two ends of the muscle really clearly. And when this muscle contracts, let's just pick any kind of action. For instance, what about flexion once again? Ah, there we see flexion, as we saw that before with the biceps. All right, so what moves when the pectoralis major contracts? Is it the clavicle and sternum right here, or is it the humerus that moves? Okay, so let's say, what was that, flexion? So clearly, the humerus is moving right here. So of these two endpoints of the muscle, which one is the insertion? Yeah, it's the humerus, because that's the one that's moving the most, right? And you can look at the insertion, and that is what the intertubercular groove, the lateral lip of the intertubercular groove actually passes over the long head of the biceps brachii. Okay, and the origin you can see on the clavicle and the scapula right here. And since the origin is on the anterior side of the humerus, not only does it cause flexion, but it can also medial rotate, because it's going to pull the anterior part of the humerus toward midline, which is going to cause a medial rotation of the arm. Let's see if it's programmed to do that. Oh yeah, that's pretty good. A good way to see medial rotation is go ahead and just flex at your elbow and then move your hand toward midline. That would be a nice medial rotation. And you can actually palpate your pectoralis major and actually feel that it's contracting when that happens. Another important action of the pectoralis muscle is adduction, right? Because when a muscle contracts, it's going to pull the insertion toward the origin. And indeed, okay, it is an important adductor. Adduction is what? Bringing the arm in toward midline. That is adduction. And what do we call bringing the arm away from midline? That would be abduction. And pectoralis doesn't aid in that. All right, so the pectoralis is one of the most important muscles for flexion of the arm. All right, so if the pectoralis major is important for flexion of the arm, and that's in the anterior thorax, where are you going to find a muscle for extending the arm? And what the heck is extension of the arm? Extension is, okay, from this position down to here. So there's a muscle that can produce force to allow that motion to happen, even though when I'm standing here, gravity will make it happen. But when would that happen? Maybe if you're doing a chin-up, okay? If your feet off the ground and you're hanging by your hands and you want to bring your humerus back down to your side, like when you're doing a chin-up, what muscle is being used to do that? Okay. And what body compartment would you think of doing that with? So it's going to be posterior trunk. And maybe not familiar with all the muscles yet by their location, that's going to be the latissimus dorsi that's in the back. So let's just see. Let's go to our muscles that act on the arm. Ah, latissimus dorsi is shown from the back. All right, so here's latissimus dorsi over here. But I think this is going to give us a little clue that this is what, a reverse angle view. All right, so let's take a look. Odd is reverse angle view. All right, so now we're looking at the posterior arm. What muscle do we find in that posterior arm? The triceps, brachii right here. Here is the latissimus dorsi. It's kind of like the opposite muscle to the pectoralis major. And the orientation of our virtual dissection is a little bit different. So again, you can practice labeling these muscles, okay, like the trapezius, deltoid, triceps, latissimus dorsi, teres, major muscle, and I don't know what this is right here. Maybe it could be teres minor, or it could be the infraspinatus. So here's the spine of the scapula. That could be infraspinatus. But how would we find out on this illustration? Click the labels in there. Aha, it's not labeled. Doesn't want to tell you because it's kind of hard to see. All right, so we're interested in latissimus dorsi. So let's go dissect some of these muscles away. So get rid of the trapezius. And now we're probably going to get rid of the deltoid. And then, when we do that, right, we can see the supraspinatus and the supraspinous fossa. We can see the infraspinatus and the infraspinous fossa. Let's pull those away. Okay. Here is a teres minor. And what view is this? How are we looking at a human, from anterior or posterior side? Posterior. Right, and notice that the teres minor is very easily seen inserting here into the posterior side of the humerus. I'll make some mention of that in just a little bit. And then the teres major goes to the opposite side, the anterior part of the humerus. So let's get rid of the major, the minor, and maybe even the three heads of the triceps muscle. Okay, and now we're left with the latissimus dorsi. Okay, so the origin, we can see the origin, all these points along the back, the spines of the lower six, thoracic vertebrae, and it's a nice simple insertion right here. It's really the floor of the intertubercular groove of the humerus, but it is also going to be anterior, right, just like the pectoralis major was. And so remember, a muscle can only pull, so it's going to pull this point, which is on the anterior part of the humerus, toward midline, and we call that adduction. Okay, and since it's on the anterior side of the humerus, it's going to pull that anterior side medially. Okay, so what kind of rotation is that going to produce? That's going to be another medial rotation. Okay, we see a nice medial rotation, but now this is how it acts as an antagonist to the pectoralis muscle. All right, because it can pull, if the arm is flexed, right, it can pull the humerus back toward your back when that happens. It can pull the humerus back. So what do we call that motion when the humerus gets pulled to your back? Instead of being anterior, it's pulled to your back. That is the opposite of flexion. That is extension. All right, so it extends the arm at the shoulder. Okay, so let's look at that motion once again. So here is nice extension of the arm. So now it's kind of flexed, and then it extends, and latissimus dorsi is important for that. So what is antagonistic to the latissimus dorsi in terms of extension and flexion of the arm? It's the pectoralis major, right? And they sort of look the same if you use a little artistic license, okay? All right, so this site is really nice for looking at those kinds of actions, as well as checking on your origins and insertions. Let's look at some other muscles of the shoulder. Okay, coracobrachialis. Now, what's really nice about the coracobrachialis in terms of learning for students? Why is it really nice? It has to do with the name. What can you tell me about the name? The origin and insertion are part of the name. So that makes it really easy. You don't have to memorize it, because if I ask you, I tell you what the answer is. So what's the origin of the coracobrachialis? And I can only see just a little bit of it right here. But even without just seeing this little bit right here, you know what the origin is. What's the origin? It's the coracoid process on the scapula. Okay, and what's the brachium? The brachium is just another name for the humerus, right, the arm. So that is the insertion. And when the coracobrachialis contracts, what's going to move? Is it going to be the scapula or is it going to be the humerus? It's going to be the humerus that moves, right? Okay, so let's look at this muscle to see what those actions possibly could be. And to find the coracobrachialis, what do we have to do? We've got to dissect away the deltoid because it's deep to the deltoid. We've got to dissect away the pectoralis and probably even dissect away the biceps and the brachialis even. All right, so let's dissect some of these things away. So there goes the deltoid, pectoralis, there's the biceps going away. The brachialis just went away. All right, so here's the brachialis. I mentioned that previously. The origin is what? The whole distal anterior shaft of the humerus. And the insertion is a coronoid process on the ulna. But let's get rid of it anyway. So now we see the coracobrachialis right here. A couple other muscles. We could get rid of them. Oh, yeah, let's get rid of all these other ones right here. So we're just left with coracobrachialis. See the nice coracoid process, right? And then the insertion is just the medial mid-diaphysis of the humerus right here. So when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the humerus toward midline, right? So that's an important, what is that motion? It's pulling toward midline, adduction, right? So it's an important adductor. And also, right, it has a way to elevate this point of the humerus up toward the coracoid process. What do we call that when the humerus is elevated anteriorly like that? That's called flexion. Right, so it does also flex. So it flexes at the shoulder and adducts. Okay, so I'm really kind of working over the shoulder joint right here in terms of flexion and extension. So what is a synergist muscle in terms to the coracobrachialis in terms of flexion of the arm? In terms of flexion, we talked about a couple already. Flexion of the arm, and not the forearm necessarily, okay, was the biceps brachii, because it actually goes across the shoulder, both the long head and the short head does, right, it weakly flexes. But one that strongly flexes is the pectoralis major, okay, pectoralis major muscle. Now, what's antagonistic in terms of flexion? Antagonistic to the coracobrachialis is going to be the, okay, we just looked at it, it was that big one that is going to be the latissimus dorsi, is probably one that would pop into my mind. Okay, so let's take a look. Some people were looking at that triceps brachii. So let's go back and look at the triceps brachii before we move on to some other muscles of the shoulder right here. Muscles that can act on the arm. Okay, triceps brachii. Okay, the triceps brachii. This does not have all the heads of the triceps. Now, both heads of the biceps brachii go across the shoulder, okay? But the triceps has three heads, and notice I only see one working across the shoulder right here. The other two, the origin is on the shaft of the humerus right here. So the lateral head is on the superior diaphysis, and the short head, which we can't really see, that's deep to the lateral, and the long head, that's on the distal humerus, right? But there is one part that does go across the shoulder, so it can produce motion at the shoulder, right? And it's going to be antagonistic to the biceps. The biceps can flex at the shoulder weakly, and so that means that the triceps can extend. And I think I heard somebody up really close in front of the class that says that this long head of the triceps is what? Antagonistic to the coracobrachialis in terms of the coracobrachialis as being a flexor of the shoulder. Okay, now what is this origin of the long head of the triceps brachii? I see a nice glenoid cavity right here. What is this point? That's the infraglenoid tubercle. Yeah. And remember, the biceps was the what? The supraglenoid tubercle. Right? So there should be some nice symmetry that should be kind of popping into your view, into your consciousness. All right, so what is extension of the shoulder or extension of the arm? That's when it's brought back down, and maybe the triceps brachii can even hyperextend a little bit. But for sure, hyperextension is going to be performed by the latissimus dorsi. All right, so what do you have to know for both lecture and for lab? It's origin and insertion, right, and action. And also the name of the muscle when you see it on a model or an illustration, or know what body compartment it's in. You don't always have to know origin and insertion. Look at your lab list. Sometimes we put an NR right there. It's not responsible for that because I didn't feel it was important for the class. But almost always the action. All right. But here's something you never have to know on any muscle, and that is the name of the nerve that innervates this particular muscle. Oh, you know what? I'm wrong when I said never have to know. There are going to be a couple skeletal muscles that we're going to look at that you do have to know the name of the nerve that innervates it, because there are a couple skeletal muscles. As a matter of fact, there's one that pops into my mind that is absolutely necessary for breathing. And of course, you can't live very long if you're not breathing, right? So if there's damage to that nerve that controls the muscle for breathing, then of course, then that's a fatal kind of injury. So it's important, it's very important to know that particular nerve. All right, so we'll eventually talk about some muscles that are important for inspiration and expiration today. All right, so that's the triceps brachii. Okay, oh, but we didn't talk about the insertion. So there's the origin. The insertion is the olecranon process of the ulna. So like the biceps brachii, it spans part of the shoulder, but it also goes across the elbow. So it does produce extension of the forearm when it contracts, because it pulls the olecranon process back to anatomic position. Okay. Okay, let's look at the deltoid muscle. All right, the coracobrachialis was medial, and since it's medial, it's easy to recognize that it could be used for adduction. Here is a muscle that's lateral, the deltoid. All right, so since it's lateral, what would you guess maybe it's one of its actions is? Abduction. Okay? So let's just take a look at that, get rid of a bunch of these other muscles. Oh, there's the origin insertion just highlighted. All right, so the origin is the clavicle and also part of the scapular spine in the back, so it wraps all the way around, and the insertion is the deltoid process. That's really easy to know. And so when this muscle contracts, it pulls at the lateral part of the humerus superiorly, and that is what we call adduction. So in terms of adduction and abduction, the coracobrachialis and deltoid are antagonistic to each other because they're in what? Opposite body compartments. Okay, the anterior part of the deltoid, okay, these anterior fascicles right here from the more anterior or medial parts of the clavicle, all right, can weakly flex the shoulder, right, and the medial part will help rotate the shoulder. All right, so I'm more interested probably in just a deltoid you should know as an abductor. But because of this broad origin right here, it might have different actions, more complicated actions. So if you want to know what origins you should know, because some muscles have a long list of origins, on page 45 in your lab manual, it gives you the abbreviated origin and insertion list that you should just know for the practicum or the lecture test. All right, so you don't have to memorize like a whole 20 different kinds of origins of different muscles. Okay, so again, if we have a pin sticking in the deltoid right here, and say the question could be, say, what is antagonistic to the deltoid? What would be a good answer to that? think in terms of abduction, adduction, then you would say, what are some muscles that can adduct? The coracobrachialis can, as well as the pectoralis major, and as well as the latissimus dorsi are also adductors. So you got a lot of choices right there, a lot of chances on that one. Okay, but probably the most obvious one is going to be the coracobrachialis. Okay, let's look at teres major. Okay, so here are a number of muscles in the shoulder. Teres major. Get these out of the way right here. The origin is a lateral border, an inferior angle of the scapula, and the insertion is on the anterior side of the humerus, so we can't see it because here's a posterior view of the humerus. Right, so it's the medial lip, it's on the inside lip of the intertubercular groove. All right, so this right here is also an adductor because it can pull the humerus toward midline, but it can also just pull the anterior part of the humerus toward midline, and so that's a rotation. All right, so that's a medial rotation, right, because it's on the anterior side. And so it does go across the shoulder joint, but notice it's pretty far away from the joint capsule, which is up in this region over here. All right, so here would be the joint capsule of the shoulder. Notice that the teres major doesn't participate in forming the joint capsule whatsoever. But there are some other muscles in this group that do. Let's see if we can put them back. Not so far. These are all inferior. Ah, here is the teres minor. And now you can see it going across the head of the humerus, and the teres minor actually helps make up part of the fibrous capsule of the shoulder joint. So that whenever the teres minor is damaged, that also damages what? The fibrous capsule of the shoulder, because it's an integral part. But there are some other muscles that might do that. Here's the infraspinatus. Can you see it right below the spine of the scapula? It's in the infraspinous fossa, and you can see it going across the head of the humerus as well. So the infraspinatus also helps make up the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. All right, so far, what are the muscles that can we see right here on this illustration that actually make up part of the fibrous capsule of the shoulder? It's the teres minor and the infraspinatus, but not the teres major because it's too inferior. All right, well, let's see. Let's put another muscle in there. So we're just kind of coloring that one out. Ah, supraspinatus. Notice it goes right underneath the acromion process, right? And it goes over the head of the humerus as well. And the supraspinatus helps make up part of the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. So whenever the supraspinatus is damaged, it damages the shoulder joint itself. So those are three muscles. And then there's one more that we can't see on this illustration, so let me go find it. Muscles that act on the arm, right, is, it's not on the list. Ah, yes it is, sorry. All right, so I had to flip back to an anterior side instead of posterior, so let's get rid of a bunch of these muscles, let's dissect them away. All right, we're doing good. Here's the teres major, which is below the joint capsule. Let's get rid of that. And that is the subscapularis. So now we're looking at the anterior side of the scapula instead of the posterior side of the scapula. And this is the subscapular fossa. And the subscapularis, the origin is the medial border of the scapula, and it inserts into the lesser tubercle of the humerus. Okay, and this is on the anterior side of the humerus, and it goes over the head of the humerus. So this is the fourth muscle that actually participates in making up part of the fibrous capsule of the shoulder. Okay, and in particular, let's look at what the action of this muscle is. All right, it certainly is. I suppose it could be considered an adductor, but actually it's going to just rotate the humerus. Which way? It's going to pull the anterior side of the humerus toward midline. The posterior side of the humerus is going to move away from midline. We call that a medial rotation. All right, so that's a medial rotation. Let's click on the action right here, and let's see if that's what happens. Yeah, indeed, that's what happens. Medial rotation. All right, so I'm going to write on the board, what were the names of those four muscles that we just looked at? That actually, they're muscles and they act on the arm, but they also make the fibrous capsule of the shoulder, the joint capsule themselves. All right, so what were those four? Okay, it was, I think we first started with, I'll make up my own order. Because I want to use this order. Okay, we've got supraspinatus, and so you should have a picture in your mind of where that is. Where is that? Can I go back to it pretty quickly? Nah, maybe. Supraspinatus. Come here. All right, so here's the supraspinatus. That's one. All right, what's another one? Kind of just right down below it. Okay, infraspinatus. Okay, and then can I see it on this diagram? I sure can. Another one, without flipping it around, is the teres minor. And then lastly, okay, we'd have to go to a different view, an anterior view of the scapula, and that would be the subscapularis. The subscapularis. So these muscles right here help make up the fibrous capsule of the shoulder, and that fibrous capsule of the shoulder, because it's kind of a complicated entity, we call it a rotator cuff. Completely surrounds the head of the humerus. And so these are the muscles that participate in forming what? The rotator cuff. Okay, let's try this. So the rotator cuff is what? It's these four muscles, but what else does it make up? The fibrous capsule of the shoulder. If you damage any of those, you damage the fibrous capsule, and it produces a lot of pain inhibition when damage to those muscles or any of those connective tissues associated with them. All right, so how are you going to remember these four muscles right here? All right, so if we take these first letters out right here, it sort of spells a word, sort of. It's what? S-I-T-S. Sits. Those are the muscles of the rotator cuff. So you might remember that for a board exam. But now, why not the teres major? You got teres minor in there, but why not teres major? Because it doesn't go over the head of the humerus. Okay? It's just too inferior. So it's not a rotator cuff muscle, even though it's very similar to the teres minor. All right, so that's how you analyze that. let's look at some muscles of the leg. Let's point out some muscles, muscle menu right here. Muscles that act on... I'm going to go over some of these wrist and palm muscles in lab. We have time to do that. How about thigh, working on the femur? So here I see a bunch of muscles. And in general, all of these medial muscles over here are going to pull the femur toward midline, so all of these muscles are going to be adductors. And then if we look laterally over here, all these muscles are going to be abductors. Okay, and so of abductors or adductors that work at the hip right here, which ones do you think are stronger? Which ones require more work day in and day out? As a matter of fact, let's look. How many muscles do we have as adductors? Well, we've got the pectineus, the adductor brevis, longus, magnus, right? So, and even the gracilis right here is an adductor. And about the only abductor that we have is the tensor fascia latae, and to some extent, under certain circumstances, the sartorius, okay? So you need to have many, many more muscles and stronger muscles for adduction than you do abduction. And to me, they makes perfect sense because, right, if you didn't have strong adductors, here's your body weight, right? Right between your legs is the center of your body weight right here. If you didn't have strong muscles holding your legs together or underneath you when you stand up, right, they would, your legs would just split apart and you would fall right down between them, right? So it makes sense that you should have really strong adductors. So let's look at, what do I want to say? I actually want to talk about some muscles that go across, muscles that act on the leg. Okay, hold on. Okay. Okay, so some anterior thigh muscles. Let's get rid of these right here. All right, I can't get rid of these adductor muscles without getting rid of some muscles that I want to talk about. So here is a group of muscles in the anterior thigh that we call the quadriceps. So just like the biceps has two origins, the quadriceps has, the triceps has how many origins? Three. Okay, biceps has two origins, triceps has three, quadriceps has four. Okay, and I can see a couple of them. All right, so here is the rectus femoris. That's the first component of the quadriceps. Here's the vastus lateralis. There's a second one. And then here's the vastus medialis. That's a third component of the quadriceps. And the fourth component is deep, and we can't see it. We call it the intermedius because it's deep to these muscles. How about if we dissect that away? Can I see it? Ooh, no. Not really. Okay, I can just barely see it right here, but it's not highlighted at all. Okay, so let's get rid of, let's put these back. Okay, so the rectus femoris, kind of like the biceps, goes across the hip because the origin is this anterior, inferior iliac spine of the ilium, and the insertion is via this tendon, the tendon of the quadriceps into the patella, and then the patella inserts into the tibia tuberosity via the patellar ligament right here. So when the rectus femoris contracts, okay, it can elevate the femur, right? We call that flexion, right? So it can, because it's working across the hip, but it's not the prime mover hip flexion. We'll take a look at that a second. But it also is going to pull on the tibial tuberosity right here. It's also an extensor of the knee. Okay. The other four divisions of the quadriceps don't work across the hip, so they're only going to be extensors of the knee. So let me show you that. So we're going to look at muscles that work on, what's that part of your body between your knee and your ankle? That's your leg, right? So that's why we're looking at muscles that work on the leg, anterior leg. And here are the remaining divisions of the quadriceps. All right, so there's the rectus femoris. Here's the vastus lateralis. Here's the medialis. And let's get all these out of the way. And can we see the intermedius? Now I might have to click on it. Specifically. All right, but the insertion is via the quadriceps tendon into the tibial tuberosity. All right, so in this particular case, all the quadriceps right, are going to extend the leg. So what the heck is extending the leg? Think of where is the leg? It's between the knee and the ankle. And when the angle at the knee decreases, we call that flexion. And when this angle increases, we call that extension. All right, so the quadriceps are very powerful muscles for extending. Right, so like when you're going to kick a ball like that, or when you're reaching out for walking or to step up on a step, the quadriceps are important for that. Okay, let me go back and let's just see if they have the intermedius right here. Ah, there it was. Okay, so here's the vastus intermedius, and you can see it does not go across the hip, so it is not a flexor of the hip, it is just what, an extensor of the knee. Just like the vastus lateralis and medialis. Now, unlike what the rectus femoris that comes from this anterior inferior iliac spine. All right, but let's look at an important flexor of the hip. An important flexor of the hip, muscles that act on leg. Let's go back, muscle system, muscles, posterior thigh. Okay, here is the iliacus muscle. Let's just draw it in. The iliacus, the origin, is the iliac fossa. Okay, it's up near the iliac crest. And the insertion is the lesser trochanter on the femur. So it goes across the hip and it's anterior. So it's going to pull this lesser trochanter up toward the iliac crest. And that's what we call flexion. All right, so that's an important muscle for flexion of the hip. There is a muscle that works with it very strongly, and that is the psoas muscle. So here is the psoas muscle right here. So the psoas muscle, the origin is from the bodies, the lateral bodies, the lateral margins of the bodies of the lumbar vertebrae, and it has the same insertion into the lesser trochanter of the femur right here. So its action is also going to be flexion at the hip. And in a lot of cases, just like the occipital frontalis, the occipital belly and the frontal belly of the epicranius, we consider one muscle. A lot of times we consider this one muscle, and maybe some of you have heard of that. That's what we call the iliopsoas muscle. So I don't see it on this list right here. I don't see the iliopsoas, but I see them broken out as two separate muscles, iliacus and psoas. And these are the important muscles for flexion at the hip. Okay, and they're going to be what? On the anterior body compartment. So where would you look for an extensor of the hip? So if these are anterior hip, okay, where would we look for muscles for extension? The posterior. Okay, so let's take a look and see what we can find for that. Oop, we got to go back one more. Muscle system. Posterior thigh. All right. Gluteus maximus. All right, so here is a nice gluteus maximus right here. And I think it's obvious that it's posterior. All right, the origin is the surface of the ilium. Right here, and it inserts into the gluteal line that's on the posterior part of the humerus. And when it contracts, it's going to pull the femur posteriorly, which is what we call extension. All right, so what have we just seen right here? Some muscles that are antagonistic to each other at the hip. All right, so extension, an important extensor of the hip is the gluteus maximus. Like for what? For walking up steps, because you need to extend at the hip to lift yourself up to the next step. All right. And what's going to be an antagonistic muscle to the gluteus maximus? The iliopsoas, yeah, or you could say iliacus or psoas major. And I suppose you could even say to some degree the rectus femoris because it goes across the hip as well. Okay. Let's look at some muscles at the ankle that work on the foot. Let's see if they got any that do that on the back, on the foot, act on the foot. Nice. Okay. Tibialis anterior. Here's tibialis anterior right here. All right, so the origin is just a lateral condyle of the tibia, and the insertion are the plantar surfaces of the foot. So when this muscle contracts, can you see that it's going to elevate the toes up off the ground? Who can remember what that action is called? That's called dorsiflexion, when you lift your toes up when you're walking so you don't trip on your toes. So indeed, is that dorsiflexion? Yeah, that's important for you to know that one. All right, so that is the action that I would think for tibialis anterior, but it also inverts the foot to some degree because you can see it causes a little bit of a rotation there. All right, so if that's dorsiflexion, where are you going to try to find muscles that cause the opposite motion? What is the antagonistic motion to dorsiflexion? Plantar flexion. Where would you look for muscles that plantar flex? Instead of the anterior leg, you're going to look at the posterior leg. All right, so let's see what we have there. Muscles that work on the posterior leg. Muscles that work on the leg. Muscles that work on posterior leg. And here's a good example right here. Would be the gastrocnemius. All right, so I clicked on it. What happened? Oh, it's searching. It's loading. Sorry. Right here. All right, so here's the gastrocnemius. So now here we have a posterior view of the leg instead of an anterior view on the leg. The origin is above the knee, the condylar ridges just above the condyles on the knee, on the posterior surface. And the gastrocnemius, even though it doesn't say it in its name like a lot of muscles do, there are two heads. There's a medial head and a lateral head. Right, but there's just a common insertion into the calcaneus via the calcaneal tendon. So you should know this calcaneal tendon right here. It goes around with another name sometimes. It's commonly called the Achilles tendon. And when the gastrocnemius contracts, it's going to elevate this posterior part of the calcaneus, which means then it's going to depress the toes. And what do we call that when the toes are pointed into the ground? That's plantar flexion. Oh, okay, it says flexion because it's talking about the knee. Let me go back to this menu. Muscles that work on, what did we have before? Ankle? Foot. Gastrocnemius. Here's the gastrocnemius. All right, so when it contracts, it's going to pull on the calcaneus. It's going to plantar flex at the foot. All right, but because it goes across the knee as well, right, and it's going to pull the calcaneus up toward the femur right here. What do we call that? What do we call that motion? When the calcaneus gets elevated up toward the femur. That's flexion. Yeah, so that's the dual action of the gastrocnemius. I didn't put that into motion before I moved away from this slide. All right, so the gastrocnemius in this sense is antagonistic to what muscle that we just looked at? Tibialis anterior for dorsiflexion, right? And gastrocnemius for plantar flexion. All right, so just always go to the opposite body compartment. One thing that we're going to notice is that, like as in many components of the body, in the posterior leg, there is another muscle that's deep to the gastrocnemius, all right, and that is called the soleus. Here's the soleus. So the gastrocnemius is up over here. Here is the soleus. Notice that it does not work across the knee like the gastrocnemius does, right? Because the origin is what? Just the proximal half of the posterior surface of the... Oh, it does work across. No, it doesn't go across the knee, just the tibia, right? To go across the knee, it would have to be on the femur right here, right? And it inserts into the calcaneal tendon, just like the gastrocnemius, which then inserts into the calcaneus. So here is probably the prime mover for plantar flexion, because it does not work across the knee. Okay, the only body part that we haven't really looked at, and let's look at some of these muscles right here, is we said that the quadriceps is important, like for kicking a soccer ball. Okay, what was that motion? Extension of the leg. Okay, and so those are the quadriceps. So what about the opposite motion? Instead of extension at the knee or extension of the leg, what about flexion of the leg? We didn't talk about that one yet. Where are we going to find those muscles? Instead of the anterior thigh, they're going to be on the posterior thigh. So let's look at some of those muscles. Okay, muscles of the that act on the leg. Okay, and muscles that act on the posterior leg. Here we go. Let's look at these right here. Another biceps. Okay, but this is not biceps brachii, because what region is this going to be in? This is going to be in the thigh or femoral region. So this is the biceps femoris. What can you tell me about, what's the relationship of the action between the biceps brachii and biceps femoris? It's a nasty quick trick question. Because the biceps is here, biceps brachii is here, biceps femoris is down over here. They don't have any interaction whatsoever. Okay, they just have a name that sounds similar because it has the same number of heads to it. Okay, so we can't call them synergists even though their names sound very, very similar. Right? So what is synergistic to the biceps brachii? The brachialis, which is just deep to it. Okay. We're looking at the biceps femoris. Let's get some of these other muscles out of the way. Okay, the adductors. Okay, so we can see the biceps. The origin is the ischial tuberosity. The insertion is the lateral head of the fibula down over here. So it works both across the hip as well as the knee, like a lot of other muscles we've looked at, right? But when it contracts, it's going to pull, right, the femur up toward, right, the back of the hip, and that's what we call flexion. Okay, so it lifts the heel up off the ground. Okay, because of the insertion down here on the tibia. All right, so that is what, nicely antagonistic to the quadriceps. What are some other muscles that do that? Other muscles on the leg. So that's the biceps. Okay. The semitendinosus. Okay, so the biceps you can see laterally right here. Medially is going to be the semitendinosus, and we call that the semitendinosus because look at this big long tendon right here. That's how you'll recognize it in lab. So the origin is the same. The insertion is just a little bit different, but it works across the knee, so that's an important flexor. And the third muscle for flexion, I can't go back. Muscle that works on the leg. Okay, is the semimembranosus. Okay, so here is the semimembranosus. And again, it's the ischial tuberosity, and this one is the same as the insertion is the same as the biceps femoris, and that's going to be a flexor. Okay, and these are commonly what we call the hamstring muscles in the posterior thigh. These are antagonistic to the quadriceps. in the anterior thigh. So let me see if I can find a nice picture of these muscles and how it is going to be relatively easy to memorize these right here. Okay, so what are the muscles that form the hamstrings? The three, the semimembranosus, the semitendinosus, and the biceps femoris. Okay, and of that group, which one is the most medial? Semimembranosus, tendinosus, or biceps? The most medial is the semimembranosus, and that's how I remember it. The most medial is membranosus. I know it's kind of a silly way of memorizing it, but there's a nice M in medial, and there's an M, there's an M right here, two M's in membranosus. Okay, right on top of the membranosus, I see the one with this long tendon right here, that tendinosus, and then the lateral, the big strong lateral muscle of the hamstring group is called the biceps femoris. All right, so what is antagonistic to the biceps brachii? What's antagonistic to biceps brachii? Ah, how about if I say you can't leave class until you tell me that? Just to wake everybody up just a little bit. Biceps brachii, where is that? Here, what's antagonistic to it? Triceps brachii. I'm glad nobody said quadriceps, all right? Okay. What's synergistic to the biceps brachii? Brachialis, okay? What is antagonistic to the biceps femoris? It's going to be the anterior, which is the quadriceps, okay? What's synergistic with the biceps femoris? The semimembranosus and semitendinosus, right? So try to remember these things by body compartment, and of course, make sure you know your body regions, right? Otherwise, it won't work. What's antagonistic to the gastrocnemius? Okay, antagonistic to the gastrocnemius. I can just barely see the gastrocnemius right here. Is the tibialis anterior, all right? What is synergistic to the gastrocnemius? The soleus, okay? Couple other ones, just two more before you go because it might help solidify some things. Muscles for flexion of the hip, muscles for flexion. Anterior muscles for flexion. Kind of a funny one. Iliopsoas, right? All right, so and what's antagonistic to the iliopsoas? Gluteus maximus. Gluteus maximus for what?
Ah.
Extension. Okay. What about at the shoulder? Muscle for, what's this motion called? That's flexion. Okay. An important muscle for flexion is the pectoralis. What about for extension? Latissimus dorsi. Okay, so those are some real important muscle groups that you should be aware of. If you have any questions, see me during office hours or something.